go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we find ourselves at the end of this first full week of September. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Your internet home for what we'd like to call conversation radio of a decidedly progressive nature. You can get the streams in a wide variety of places. The easiest thing is to simply go, as many of you do, to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click the Listen Live button. Or you can go and get the stream address directly from WhiteRoseSociety.org. Or you can go to TuneIn Radio, where we enjoy rather a decent listenership. Or you can always go to Tuner Internet Radio or Stitcher Radio. And there's probably a few others that I'm leaving out. I need to figure that out at some point. I don't know, when we get a 48-hour day or something. But this is The Horn, and it is Friday. It's Friday on the front porch. Mosey on up. Knock the dust off your boots. This is West Virginia, and that crap's toxic. Knock the dust off your boots. Come on up on the porch. Reach over. Pour yourself a glass of ice-cold lemonade or sweet tea. Some unsweetened over there for those that can't handle the sugar, and tucked away over in the corner there, for the select few, there's an old crockery jug with a corn cob stopper. What's in it often substitutes for racing fuel. It's about 150 proof. Swig on it right gentle-like if you choose to pick it up. That's how it goes on a Friday on the front porch, here in the last waning days of summer in almost level West by God, Virginia. Pay no mind to the rattling and shaking and the gigantic explosions going off around you. That's just more clean coal being extracted. Soaked in blood, mind you. But it's clean coal being extracted to preserve our energy future. You heard that, right? Last night? I've been cruising along through Democratic National Convention week. It was a little frustrating at the beginning. Realizing it's frustrating to realize how difficult it is to get the word out about the sacrifice zone that is open for business here in Appalachia, thanks to mountaintop removal, thanks to coal companies that give not a tinker's damn about whether Appalachian people live or die. That was a little frustrating, but I got into the swing of things. I watched Michelle Obama's speech, and I was moved as few speeches have ever moved me. She may very well be the better speechmaker of that couple. I heard others as well. Sandra Fluck was brilliant. Jennifer Granholm was wonderful. Had the crowd whipped into a frenzy. Speaking up for the salvation of the auto industry and the number of jobs that it affected in a variety of states outside her home state of Michigan. Joe Biden was excellent. There was a lot of great speechifying all along the way. And I was cruising right along. Bill Clinton was who he is. A master manipulator of political rhetoric. All things being equal, I hate to say it, but he probably did overshadow the incumbent president a little bit, but that's okay if it helps the incumbent president get it reelected, right? Sure. And so we got through a program last night that had some very painful elements to it. I can't get Maura off my mind, nor do I think that I should. You don't just move on to the next thing when some member of your family moves on out of this, shuffles off this mortal coil, out, brief candle and all of that. But I was trying to just sit back and relax. Had the TV on back here. Had it on mute during the whole program. Wanted to make sure I caught the president's speech. And I did. Yes, I did. I heard a lot that I agreed with. Some that I didn't. There was some stuff that was unmentioned. Predator drone strikes that have deliberately targeted American citizens, for instance. I just can't imagine that the framers envisioned that. But then again, I wouldn't know half of what the framers envisioned if I hadn't spent the last couple of years working with my dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien on the PRISM West Virginia American History class project. We've brought you a lot of those over the last couple of years. Tremendous. Three summer academies, a year's worth of online chat discussion sessions. We had one scheduled for tomorrow, that has been delayed until further notice. So I'll let you know what shakes out with that. No, I wouldn't have known much about the Constitution. Well, I knew a good bit about it. But I didn't know the really deep history behind it until I had the opportunity to learn from the PRISM West Virginia American History Series. It has been an amazing experience. But I also understand that this word democracy gets thrown around rather loosely, especially during political seasons when the propaganda is running fast and hot. And things like this democracy and our democracy largely ring hollow in my ears anymore. Because I understand that one of the very reasons for scrapping the Articles of Confederation and moving toward the Constitution lay in the fact that democracy was breaking out everywhere and the moneyed classes in this country were not at all happy about it. So there's that. But still, I was toddling along listening to the president's speech last night. Oh, come on. You knew what I was going to talk about before I even opened the microphone, didn't you? Anybody who heard that speech last night knew what I was going to open with this evening. I'm sure every other progressive radio program in this country has opened with something else. But not me. I can't. I can't. Because something was said, something happened during the course of that speech last night that just took everything else that that week had built, as far as I was concerned, and shattered it into a million, billion, trillion tiny pieces. Two words uttered by the President of the United States in the energy future portion of the program. On the one hand, lo and behold, President Obama said climate change is no joke. I think he kind of had to, don't you? You got to periodically throw a bone to members of your constituency who like to at least hear their issue mentioned. And so climate change is no joke. And I agree with him. Now, never mind the fact that, the oxymoron said, global warming is a hoax, just as you are, my friends. Somebody hand me that box of pills. I like to chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. That man's got a lot of money. I want him. Could we start a national campaign? Maybe I need to get hold of the Stop Rush guys over on the Twitters. We need to start a campaign encouraging Flush Flimball to build himself a mansion in the Maldives. I mean, Jesus, consider his bulk and his girth. The bastard has to be able to float. I don't know how many people were moved or convinced by that line about climate change is no joke. The intelligent people already know that. But before the I just got a note. Jack. That those are the two words. Jack in Shreveport. Ron in Raleigh wrote me just before showtime. He said, I trust you listened to the president's speech last night. I did a spit take with my Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beers, you know, when once again he touted clean coal. Also, he proudly proclaimed how much land he has opened for oil drilling and fracking. He also spoke tangentially about Simpson Bowles and the grand bargain. The thing that concerns me, Ron says, the most about President Obama is that he has this tendency to do all the things I don't want him to do and nothing that I do want him to do. And that was the moment, of course. Clean coal. He said it. 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 Clean coal. And it was as though I could feel dinner coming up, which was especially interesting insofar as I try not to eat right before showtime, which means I had not had dinner. Clean coal. And when you're like me and you've spent a lifetime reading stuff and hearing stuff and seeing stuff, everything is a back reference to something else. And so it was that I was transported to the salad days of Bob the Young English Major. in some survey class, reading, "Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient, etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells. Streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit." Those two words took me to a passage from T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. In particular, a couple of lines. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a moment, these are the lines. In a minute, there is time for decisions and revisions, which a minute will reverse. In a minute, there is time for decisions and revisions, which a minute will reverse. And in those two words, everything got thrown into reverse. I trust you've probably never been cruising along at highway speeds in an automobile when some wiseacre puts the car in reverse. Bad things, man. Bad things. In a minute, there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. And in the instant that it took for President Barack Obama to say those hateful, noxious, filthy, godforsaken words, clean coal, everything good that had happened at that convention turned to ashes for me. A number of you were equally disgusted. I tweeted a little bit about it. I got responses on Twitter. I got responses on Facebook. The responses were uniformly the same. There was no one who could or would defend his use of those two revoltingly obscene words. Coal's a pretty obscene word any way you slice it. Clean is a nice word. Cleanliness is next to godliness, after all, right? Next thing you know, the coal industry will be branding it as godly coal. They kind of already do, the Dominionists among them at least. In a minute, there is time for decisions and revisions, which a minute will reverse. Clean coal. Because, see, in that moment, I did not suspect. In that moment, I did not surmise. In that moment, I knew, all the way down to my toenails, that Barack Obama does not give a good old-fashioned damn about anybody in Appalachia, born or un, here or gone, in being or gonna be. Doesn't give a damn. And it's okay. It's okay. I want to make something abundantly clear here. I'm still voting for the guy. I am. The hell else am I going to do? Go vote for Bishop Willard Romney and his wife with whom he has the real marriage? Yeah, I'm voting for the guy. You know why? Because I don't just care about Appalachia. I care about people outside Appalachia. Americans. Because I care about that flower seller's daughter on a corner of a street somewhere in Tehran, whom I hope the flower seller never has to find himself picking up and carrying out of the mangled wreckage of some godforsaken bombing run. Yes, I know about the Predator drones. I know babies have been pulled out of that rubble too. But I do. I am glad that there are people in Detroit and people in Michigan and people in Ohio and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Virginia and Colorado, as Jennifer Granholm noted, who still have jobs in the auto industry because of actions taken by the Obama administration. I'm glad. I'm glad for them. No man is an island unto himself, right? I'm glad for them. I'm glad for women who will have access to contraceptive care that will give them a degree of sovereignty over their own bodies that they did not have before Barack Obama became president. I'm glad. I'm glad for all the people who didn't die when Isaac came ashore twice in the Gulf, because a certain insistence was made that we be ready, or readier than we were when Katrina landed. I'm glad for mothers and fathers and children who have seen their beloved mothers and fathers, grandsons, granddaughters, sons and daughters, nieces and nephews, come home from the Iraqi hellhole. I'm glad. But I'm also a realist. Had an inquiry earlier in the day about what I plan to say this evening because of the clean coal remark. And you know, there just haven't been too many installments of this program that haven't included what has come to be referred to as the obligatory Star Trek reference. And we've got one this evening. It's that incredibly touching moment at the end of what? Wrath of Khan? When Spock tells Kirk that the needs of the many must outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And I realized that that was what Barack Obama had told Appalachia last night. That 4,000 people in West Virginia per year who live in mountaintop removal communities must become excess deaths. For the needs of the many coal company shareholders, for the needs of the many coal company executives, for the needs of the many coal-fired power providers, that if we Appalachians love our country, we must be willing to have our lives laid down involuntarily for it. There will be no national cemeteries. There are no national cemeteries for the people killed by coal. Judy Brown's grave is tucked away in a little place that was precious to her. There are no headlines, another day, another death from clean coal in this state, because we live in a media lockdown. There will be no bands. There will be no playing of the Dead March. Nothing. And you know what? Not why us. Not why Appalachia. No, Mr. President. Why not us? Who would get to have their beings laid open on the blood-soaked altar of profit if it were not us? If you know anything of the history of the settlement of Appalachia, you know that it was largely settled by the Scots-Irish. We were sent in here to dispossess the first peoples, the native peoples, of what was theirs. And we killed and we slaughtered until we had almost run every last one of them out of Appalachia. And we claimed the hollers and the hillsides for our own. We were sacrificial victims then. We are sacrificial victims now. I'll admit it would be easier if I didn't get these meaningless blast emails. And I mean, I think I've gotten one every 20 freaking minutes this week. The most painful one, though, came from Michelle Obama. Bob, thank you for an amazing week. Barack and I felt your energy up there. But we can't let that energy fade, because in just 60 days, voters will decide who gets to serve in the White House for the next 4 years. So every single one of us has got to pull together to finish strong. I know you feel the urgency. Already this week, supporters like you have made more than 500,000 grassroots donations to build this campaign. So if you're fired up, let's keep it going. Let's see how many people we can get to show their support by the end of the day. Can you chip in $5 or more to stand with Barack today? Barack's got something that the other side doesn't. More than 3 million grassroots supporters like you. And together we're going to win this election the right way. The donation you give today will make a big impact in the final stage of this race. And on November 7th, you can wake knowing that you did everything you could to help us deliver on the full promise of the next 4 years. Make this our biggest week yet, and give $5 or more right now to win this election in the final 2 months. Thank you, Michelle. I saw that. And I didn't get furious. I didn't get angry. No. To the extent I pray, which is kind of not at all, I thought, Michelle, Mrs. Obama, you magnificent human being, I thank God, such as there is one. I thank God that you haven't had to raise your two daughters in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. I thank God you haven't watched them roll sedated into surgery for something you're told is, well, it's routine. And hope against hope, and nothing but hope, that it really is. I thank God, Mrs. Obama, that Sasha and Lilia will likely never open the tap for a drink of water and see something that looks like tomato soup and smells like grim death itself come out the spigot. I thank God for that, Mrs. Obama. And I'm sure you do too. Because you would not allow anyone you loved to live in the circumstances that people who have to live near the profit centers of mountaintop removal have to live with. Bless his heart, last night after the clean coal comment, Malloy said, I'd just about give anything for Barack Obama to sit down and talk about clean coal for just 30 minutes with me. And Lord, wasn't that humbling. And what a sense of honor I felt. It wouldn't have to be me. It could be Bo Webb. It could be Mickey McCoy. It could be my friend Alan Johnson. It could be Vernon Haltom. There are lots of people who know what the cost we pay is. Yeah, Jug of Punch, it could be Jeff Biggers. But see, the point is, we have begged for him to hear us since before the November 2008 elections. And we have received nothing or something so near nothing as to be undistinguishable from nothing. But I want to be abundantly clear. I'm voting for him. I have a vested interest in voting for him. Because if he wins, I want to be able to say, I voted for you. Twice. And I'm not asking for some sinecure or satrapy. Just the opportunity to live from one day to the next without being eaten up in the fear, the terror. Mountaintop removal is terrorism, you see. The phone will ring, or someone will walk through the door. With some kind of disaster. On their lips. It's all. It's been a tough week. It's been a very tough week. For reasons I've told you about and reasons I haven't. But I thank you for at least listening. Am I suggesting that life is any harder in Appalachia than for someone else, some other oppressed community in some other part of this country? No, I am not. But this is the oppression that I and mine know. And we know it is oppression. And the only thing in the world we can do is engage in the struggle and do what we think is right and ask you, if you think what we're doing is right, to stand with us. That is how the AIC Act came into being. The AIC Act was an idea that was hatched the minds of people who actually have to live with mountaintop removal. Of people who know those fears, who know those constant worries, who have put friends and loved ones in the ground. It is a truly grassroots effort. You know by now, of course, unless you're brand new to the program, that you can go to AICACT.org and learn everything you need to know about this struggle for justice in this region of the United States that has been treated like little more than a cookie jar from which the rich and powerful may periodically reach in and grab wealth. Untold wealth. Uncountable wealth. And the only way we're going to get the AIC Act passed is by grassroots effort. You know, there's a petition over at change.org. There's a link to it at AICACT.org. If you haven't signed it, it'd be great if you did. If you have signed it, but you haven't sent it around for all your friends, that would be great too. And in talking about the AIC Act, I should probably offer up a program note. And that is this. Probably on either the 11th or certainly on the 12th, I'm leaving for D.C. Try to get some shows in. I don't know if I will or not. I certainly will by the following Monday. Take the gig rig with me. There's a big event that will feature a call for support of the AIC Act on the 13th in Washington, D.C., being hosted by our very dear friends at Earth Justice. On the 14th, I'm going to fly to Wisconsin to the Fighting Bob Fest, to which I have been kindly invited. I might try to get a stream out from there just so you can hear what's going on. But I'll be sitting on a panel talking about coal extraction and mining and talking about the explosively toxic processes that are heading for that lovely, lovely state of which I have become exceeding fond. I'll get back to D.C. on Sunday and, like I said, do everything in my power to be on the air on Monday. That's the plan. Jesus, I don't mean to be such a downer. But there's just not a hell of a lot I can say to pretty up those two filthy words that mean that I and mine and virtually everyone here that I care about are expendable. I'm just saying. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is Conversation Radio. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Results of how we'll get back. Thinking ahead means preparing
for the future.
The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
Minutes before the hour, this is the Horn Friday on the front porch. I'm Bob Kincaid. Gee, I hope nobody just tuned out and said, to hell with that. Bob's a little bit too much of a downer for a Friday. Supposed to be laughing and carrying on, having a high old happy little time. It's Friday, damn it. Sorry. May not get any better. Just warning. We've yucked it up and laughed and carried on. And then again, there have been nights like this. And I got to tell you, I mean, there's a reason. There's nothing quite like being told that you simply don't matter. That will either fire you up or lay you low. And I've been oscillating back and forth between the two. It was cool, though. Got an email in from Tamara. Got off the phone. I said, right behind you, Bob. Got off the phone with my local Congress member, both the local office and her D.C. office, followed up with an email, a variation on this message. San Diego Gas and Electric, owned by Itochu Corp, Korea, buys coal from companies engaged in mountaintop removal. You may not think that you're participating in the creation of a human health catastrophe, but if your local utility uses dirty energy, you probably... Thank you, Tamara. Thank you so very much. Thank you. And by the way, in answer to the question, what was the music? Because I always get to. The first song was Afternoons and Coffee Spoons by the Crash Test Dummies. Quite possibly one of the most literate bands I've ever heard in my life. They came out of Canada back in the 90s. And after that, what we came back with was Donald Fagen, Trans Island Skyway, first track on the disc, Kamakiriad. He's always good for that hopeful stuff of a sort of green, high-tech future. And, you know, that future does exist. It's not in the future. It's here. It's just not in many places in the United States. You know? Right. So, I knew you'd want to know that. He doesn't give much of a damn about Appalachia. But I'm voting for him anyway. But even though there is not much sympathy for us, somehow or another, my raisin, or whatever you call it, demands I have a certain degree of sympathy for him. Maybe that's just dysfunctional. Maybe that's not morality. But I ran across this over at Daily Coast. It was posted yesterday in relation to a tweet that a 16-year-old put out there and, okay, I want it understood. Agent Fred, listen very carefully, Agent Fred. I am reading this tweet not approving of it and not endorsing it. I am reading this tweet as a function of reporting so that other people may know the tenor that obtains across this country. This is a story of a 16-year-old girl named Alyssa from Southern Ohio. She's a high school student and apparently is learning how to be a hairdresser as well. Neither of that has much to do with what she tweeted. Within the 140-word parameter, 140-character parameters of Twitter, she simply posted the following. Someone needs to assassinate Obama, dot, 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 like ASAP. Hashtag, die, you piece of shit. The diary over at Daily Coast notes that that tweet was retweeted. For those of you familiar with the Twitter sphere, you know what that means. It means someone repeated her to their own followers. More than 300 times as of the publication of the diary. Some people who retweeted it, and perhaps some people who didn't, but at any rate, 60 people with Twitter accounts checked it off as a favorite. The young woman, 16, has gained followers since she tweeted that. And how do you respond to that? I don't know that you can. That's the kind of thing that parents and communities have to take care of. It is a pretty clear indication, however, of where this country is. That's the, you know, granted, it was not an electronic age, but that's the kind of crap that was going around in 1865. That's the kind of crap that was being talked in this country in 1961. We got trouble in this country. What do you do with a 16-year-old who does something like that? I mean, that is probably pretty clearly in violation of some federal law regarding remarks about encouraging attempts on the life of the President of the United States. I think there really is a law against that. Anybody want to bet this young woman's a, you know, follower of the Prince of Peace? Jesus Christ. I mean, do you give the 16-year-old a stern talking to? Or do you charge the 16-year-old under the statute that makes it a crime to advocate violence against the President of the United States? One news account that gave me pause just by the wording said, using the young woman's name, you can look it up if you want to, is a 16-year-old Caucasian girl who might have just ruined her life. She's a hairdresser and a high schooler just trying to live a normal life who will graduate in 2014. But from this day forward, her reputation, her chance at ever getting a job, and her life have taken a twisted turn for the worse. She decided to recklessly tweet something which is considered a threat to our national security, and she could be held liable for her actions in a courtroom or even in a jail cell. It was that use of 16-year-old Caucasian girl that kind of caught my eye. The right-wing machine is ready to make a martyr of her. God Almighty. Really? What lies? And here's the greater question. 16-year-olds, I know, having a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and an 18-year-old, and a 23-year-old. 24? 23. Jesus, I hope Agnes isn't listening. 23-year-old. They can do impulsive things because the human brain doesn't get done forming up and wiring itself until, what, about age 26? And that's one of the challenges of parenting. You hope that usually takes the form of eating a bag of marshmallows until they're sick at their stomach. Not tweeting threats against the life of the President of the United States. But in either instance, you as a parent have to do something. But the problem is, what if she did what she did because of what she hears at home? We don't know what the answer is to that question. But what do you expect In a world where video games are marketed to teens that are called Hail to the Chimp? What do you expect in a world where if the said teenager happens to find her way over to the AM dial, all she's going to hear is, Obama is a Kenyan Muslim socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people, and he's going to destroy America. What do you expect? Our buddy Ray gets it. And, of course, people like Neil Bortz claim no responsibility. Yeah. And if you ask Limbaugh, well, my friends, I am only an entertainer. I'm a comedian. Yeah, you're as funny as an effing hearse, Rush. Jeebus. Marty, noting, and she's probably a fan of the Hunger Games until she found out the character Rue was black. Irish Dave, whose mind goes in directions that I cannot even contemplate sometimes, says, can 16-year-olds be like, you know, proxy baptized, and if so, can she be a celestial wife and have herself a real marriage? Dunno. Ron and Raleigh. But Bob, she was probably taken out of context. The young lady needs a visit from the Secret Service. I don't remember anyone threatening Dim Sun during his administration because, you know, it would have been all over Fox News. P.S. Some time on probation would do this young lady some good. But this is the country we live in. You know how I found out about this story? My son told me about this story. Because it was on his Facebook page. Because there were lots of kids saying, yeah, you go, girl. And here's the fun part. That federal statute that makes it a crime to threaten the life of the president? Let's have a little legal moment, shall we? Or a little speculative moment. Let's assume that she was charged as an adult with this. Or as a juvenile. The only real difference being that juveniles' records are expunged when they reach their majority. And they cannot be sent to real jails unless charged as an adult. Let's say this young woman is charged. Anybody want to bet that the Liberty League or one of those right-wing law firm filth pits would take up her cause to the Supreme Court so that the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, could strike down as an unconstitutional violation of free speech such conduct? Bets? Anybody? I'm guessing Harris in Reno wouldn't take them. Yeah, by the way, honored to Dystopia reminding me, apparently Neil Bortz is retiring. Good. I'm sure he'll be replaced by someone equally obnoxious. Thanks. Welcome to America. In some of those moments of the Democratic Convention, I had a little of that. It's like saying I had a little shot of strychnine. I had a little dose of that hope stuff. That Orion Magazine article has stayed with me. But you saw a cross-section of America at that convention. I was so busy going apoplectic over the words clean coal. Did anybody hear it in its context sufficient enough to know if they just cheered and cheered when that was mentioned? I don't know. This just came in from Jake. He said, I just signed the ache petition on change.org. It has a paltry 401 signers at this point. I was surprised, to be sure. I've been following the issue for a long time. I was horrified when on a flight to Florida from New York about 10 years ago, I saw from air the devastation wrought by mountaintop removal. Additionally, I spent my college years in Athens, Ohio, in the foothills of the Appalachians, and the people in that area have suffered the cruel effects of strip mining and the devastation brought to their land by the autocratic coal companies, who, once they had exploited the natural wealth, left the communities in the area to wither and die. I also subscribe to ilovemountains.org as well. As you know, Ohio is once again under assault by the energy oligarchies, as Governor Kasich has virtually given frackers carte blanche to destroy at will, including our state parks and forests. There's a land rush among the fracking interests in eastern Ohio, and a friend of mine who owns and runs one of the oldest organic farms outside Athens is concerned because his neighbors are selling their land to the frackers, potentially poisoning his water supply with disastrous results on his livelihood. When will it ever end? Jake asks. They seem willing to stop at nothing in their rapacious race to doom and destruction. I admire you greatly and the courageous work you do. I enjoy listening to your show, and I love some of the callers, especially Jim and Sandra. I tried recently to join your mailing list so I could do the chat room, but I have not yet received any confirmation or okay to join. Perhaps you can look into why if you have a moment. I'd love to join the conversation. Best of luck on your coming travels, especially to Wisconsin, where the fracking interests are poised to wreak destruction on that state. Stop them before they start, you know. It's easier than stopping them after they start. Thank you, Jake. And, yeah, we need signatures at change.org. I mean, they won't even look at it until, you know, what, 10,000 signatures? So, please, don't just sign it yourself. When you sign it, pass it on. Tell your whole mailing list about it. God, we can't keep this a secret any longer. 4,000 people a year are begging you not to let it be kept a secret any longer. Jim writing in, he says, under the subject line, exhortations on the right, these malevolent radio hatemongers are guilty of a call to murder the leader of the free world. Yes, they are, Jim. And how effective have they been, Jim? This is the larger question, and it's a question for the entire Horn family. How effective have they been when they've got 16-year-old girls doing it? I mean, this isn't some cranky dude with his one gun and one tooth screaming in front of the Supreme Court. This isn't a teabagger. This is a teabagger in the making. But they've got it to the point where it is filtered down to the children, and that is cause for pause and reflection. Oh, we got a lot of stuff tonight. But I'm going to take a moment, and I'm going to do a little splaining. You have heard me mention, and maybe this is appropriate just because of the general tenor of the program, tonight at least. You've heard me explaining lately, as we went through the month of August and now that we've begun the month of September, how utterly necessary it is that we reach our fundraising goal. A couple of times along the way, I have mentioned that part of that necessity is because of the fact that we can no longer make up the shortfalls here. Because, you see, that's what would happen month in and month out. When we didn't make the fundraising goal, we made up the shortfall out of our own pockets here. And the $2,500 that you see on the website is not everything that it takes to keep this going. What that represents is a bare minimum. Because I don't make a living off this program. When we started this program, we had the idea that maybe we could get this thing to go national and get picked up by a syndicator, blah, 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 sell Buy Gold Now ads, and, you know, have it be a living. But that never materialized. And at that point in time, it became simply a matter of keeping this afloat. And we have managed to do so. And as I said, out of our own pockets, we have made up the shortfalls. Well, some things have happened in the last couple of months that have made our pockets turn inside out. Without giving you the precise details, it is simply this. Our living, such as it was, has disappeared. It has ended. It's gone away. Things that I was able to do in the time that I'm off the air, projects I was able to work on, are done. Finished. Kaput. The partial sponsorship that helped out a great deal here is done. All told, well, it runs into the thousands of dollars. And they were thousands of dollars that we pumped back into the program here. So I just hope, to convey, there's that word, I need to convey that when we talk about fundraising here, it is not simply a matter of gee, wouldn't it be nice? If this is to continue, it will continue only because of the continued support and the continued monthly meeting of the fundraising goal. Frankly, I could raise it up considerably, and it would be a more accurate reflection of what is needed. But I'm not going to do that. But it is absolutely, critically, no kidding, necessary that we raise $2,500 per month if the horn is to continue. It has been grim around here. It has been frightening, and I've tried not to let that carry over into the program. But this is not, sure, we joke with each other, we laugh, we carry on and so forth. But this is not entertainment. This is not the Daily Show. This is not something that exists because, well, I think that there needs to be one more progressive program out there. No. This is something entirely different. This is an attempt to reinvent a medium and to create community where a determined effort by the other side has largely succeeded nationwide in defeating the notion of community, especially among progressive people. We are supposed to sit in front of our televisions, passively accept the information coming at us, believe everything that the for-profit media offer, and as that song from a few nights ago notes, eat and excrete and die. This is not that. So the goal that I've set is to make it to the day after the election. Right now, we're trying to hang tough for the month of September. But bills are due, and they're not letting up. Been paying them all week. If you see the bar graph on headonradionetwork.com, it might almost look like we're ahead of the game. We aren't. Part of that, I will tell you, is in excess of $300 of that total you see on there is a matter of the funds being provided, which will get me to Wisconsin. Because we think the conversation is that important. That enabled the plane ticket. The 7th anniversary of the internet-only version of the horn will occur on October the 24th. We have never been so near to not making it. And that's a fact. So to the extent that we are all candid with one another, I had to be that candid with you. We had two separate funding sources dry up within 3 weeks of each other. And that's reality. And it is going to be hard going forward. Because, you know, we're not fundraising for food. We're fundraising for things like phone bills and internet bills and equipment replacement. I'm sitting here behind a board that John Fox has repeatedly told me, Bob, that thing's got to go. It's dying. Like I said the other night, the phone processor that's sitting up here, you know, it's as old as this effort is. Back in July, we passed the 7-year mark with it. It's holding up. Who knows how long? But I need to make clear that $2,500 that we talk about every month is the absolute rock bottom, bare bones amount that it takes to keep this going. So please bear that in mind when you hear me talking about it. This is not a wish list. It is the absolute necessity of what it takes if we are to continue this experiment in community building and conversation. Okay? The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address under the tab Contribute. Bossman Wayne gets the mail. The PayPal account gets your electronic transfers, and they all do the same things. They pay the bills. So I apologize if I've been grim. Last night with the clean coal business didn't help. But it's hard to watch something that has hung on this long hang by so thin a thread. So it's 20 minutes past the hour. Let us go to the phones and have that little conversation that happens across a sort of virtual back fence every evening, Monday through Friday. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you wish to save us the toll-free freight, you can dial direct if you've got some sort of free long-distance dialing plan. Do not hurt yourself, though. That's what the toll-free number's there for. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. Hey, welcome to the program.
This call is being sponsored by Clean Coal and Natural Gas.
You sure know how to hurt a guy, David.
Oh, man, talk about hurt. Did you see the, when you watched the DNC, MSNBC footage every single time in the backdrop, did you see what they showed?
No.
Natural gas.
Man, there's some bet hedging going on here that you and I can't even contemplate, David.
Did you see the ads at all that they were running during that?
I turned away from the ads mostly. I saw some fracking ads, and I saw the one. I saw the Pat Boone ads,
mm-hmm.
hustling reverse mortgages.
I mean, did you see the natural gas ads that they were running?
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, when they mentioned how natural gas is in. Wishes to work in association with wind and solar. You see, Bob, because natural gas wants to power the solar plants and the wind power plants just out of the goodness of their heart.
Right, because they're just that kind, decent, you know, feeding ice cream, sending little girls out to feed ice cream cones to squirrels kind of companies. Right, right, yeah.
But I can't. I couldn't help. I watched some of the footage, and I think the best take on it was, if you get a chance, everyone should check it out. The Daily Show did a parody of the Obama documentary, and they had Larry David narrating it.
Oh God! I thought I was going to do a spit take on the monitor when I saw that thing. It could have been worse.
pretty good.
Frickin' asteroid didn't hit us.
Yeah, I thought it was rather appropriate. I think what you're feeling, what a lot of people are feeling, is the sentiment is getting more and more resonant, and I think people are at a point where definitely Malloy has been at a few nights now. Not sure what to do, staying with what you have, that enclave, that, you know, stay. I hate the term, I hate it because it's probably a right-wing invention, the term lesser of two evils. It's not lesser of two evils, it's just which one you choose and decide.
Well, no, I mean, look, David, maybe I'm just putting it in the wrong words, but I keep trying to explain. One, this ain't a democracy.
Right.
Two, this is an empire. And every 4 years, in an empire that is run along principles like the United States is run, you get to choose one out of two imperial administrators. The system that is set up is winner take all. This isn't like Parliament where you've got proportional representation. It just isn't. It's winner take all. And consequently, you wind up with a dual party political system, I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but where all third party votes are vanity votes, okay? They just are.
It is kind of tragic. I listened to a interview a few weeks ago with Jill Stein. And Sam Cedar was debating her quite well of why he was still voting Democrat, and she still couldn't get it. She still couldn't understand. And I think the problem is once you get really, really politically ambitious and you just say, I'm going to run for president and I'm going to be on the third party ticket, the air is a bit different. Let's put it that way. The air is a bit different. Even if you're a progressive, you're an ultra, ultra, mega progressive, which, by the way, you can now join. I just started the ultra, mega progressive party.
Ultra, mega progressive? can you level up to ultra, mega, super progressive?
Well, see, here's the thing. It's like Voltron. We connect like lions, and we also have a bitchin' sword, and we can do battle through the galaxy. Now the whole plan of the robot lions connecting together, I still don't have that worked out. But believe me, people, it's on the way. It's on the way. Just contribute. That's the feeling I get from a lot of these political causes who are third parties. And not to piss any people off, but if you don't have any chance of winning, what are you doing? You're sucking air out of the room.
Again, this is not an attempt to piss anybody off, but if we took all the goodwill and energy that went into the Green Party, we could change the Democratic Party. I believe that. And we understand how really dodgy I am about the word believe.
And
what a sketchy
think,
little concept I think that is.
And why do you think GOP financiers like third parties?
Well, what do you... Okay, I'm going to say this. Haven't seen it, but it's happened before. Happened in 2000, happened in 2004. The GOP has a way of, you know, giving a little something-something, little political donations, you know, third-party candidates.
Right,
if they think they're going to hurt the Democrat.
And see, here's the problem. When you talk to someone long enough, and if you are listening to me, and you keep saying, we need a third party, we need a third party, well, listen to this. Once you get into Washington, D.C., what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You don't have that leverage that the Democrats or the Republicans do. What are you going to do if you get that miracle? You're going to sit there, and you're going to get your ass scorched. That's what's going to happen. You're going to be the laughingstock on all media. There is no Jimmy Stewart moment. There is no Mr. Smith goes to Washington with that. That's out the window.
Well, and look, I mean, for instance, in what I was talking about at the beginning of the program, David, it's the difference between things have not been as bad in term. Well, there have been some minuscule attempts to rein in some of the worst excesses of mountaintop removal in Appalachia in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have been struck down by the courts. Many of them have been half measures. But there some tiny little itsy bitsy efforts have been made, and I don't want to denigrate those.
Right.
But if Bishop Willard Romney gets in, this place is going to go up like Roman candles on the 4th of July.
Mm.
I mean, we do love our movie references, don't we, David?
Yes.
The end of Caddyshack, the first movie, the one that didn't suck.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, when Bill Murray is setting off all the little plastique animal charges in all the little holes.
Except without the cute little gophers dancing to a mullet Kenny Loggins, I'm all right.
Right, that won't be there, but the explosions all over the place. Yeah, that's Appalachia.
Yeah.
Because, you know, who do you think Bishop Romney will appoint? He ain't going to continue the tenure of Lisa Jackson, let's just put it that way.
Well, you know, Bob, it's an interesting point. And I go back to, I think people, if you can track it down, just type in Jill Stein, Sam Cedar, and listen to the interview, because the point that Sam makes, and it's a really valid one, you can talk platitudes and you can talk great bumper stickers and say, we need a third party. We need to make this country more progressive. And after a while, it comes from a good place. But when you start talking about the hardcore gristle, meat, and bone, people start to crumble because they don't know how to answer. They just know, well, this is what I'd like to do. Well, this is what I'd like to do. Well, yes, but when you get in the sausage factory, what are you going to do?
And again, I'm not trying to... I'm not trying to say that any... How can I put this, David? I live in a state where I've got a governor and a guy running for governor who are trying to outfillate the coal industry.
Right.
I mean, it's like a bad porno movie. I've got a sitting, allegedly Democratic junior senator running against a butt-crazy Republican who are each trying to outfillate the coal industry, outfillate each other with the coal industry. I know that's rather graphic, but it's the truth. Okay? So, got no choices. I have no choice in my congressional race. Last night made it feel like I don't have much of a choice in the presidential race. But I have a reason for voting for Barack Obama.
Right,
it is important for me to be able to say that I did this, even knowing what you said. It would impede my it would impede our efforts to do otherwise. However, No, when I walk in to the voting booth on November 6th, I'll be leaving the governor's race blank.
Right.
I'll be leaving the senator's race blank. I'll be leaving my member of Congress's race blank. There are about three elections where I will actually cast votes and hope they mean something. You know, with all the usual caveats about optical scanners that can't be trusted. The fact that I will not vote on a video game voting machine, even though they'll have one there for me in case I have an overpowering urge to, I don't know, play a little Pac-Man while I'm in line. You know, we got a note from our buddy Robert in Australia. He was kicking in to help. But along the way, he said, well, the electric bill has arrived, but not as bad as expected, so here's a little extra for September. And I'm changing electric suppliers, which should save a few dollars for next quarter. Then he says the following. Now I'm off to vote. You see, it's Saturday morning, or probably approaching noon in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm off to vote. He has council elections. Probably take me longer to walk up to the polling station and back than it will to vote. Signed, Robert. He will vote. And by the way, thank you. Thank you, Robert. He will vote on a paper ballot with a handheld marking device. Human beings will count those ballots. And the results will be out in, as Robert had said, somewhere between 24 and 48 hours. And it's not like everybody is going to sit around with bated breath waiting to see what happens. Life will continue. But we can't have that here, because voting has been deemed to be a bad idea. It was kind of interesting, I thought, that suddenly the Secretary of State of Ohio, who has been, oh, hell no, we're not going to, has now announced that, oh, wait a minute, I don't know. Y'all didn't understand me when I said there wouldn't be any early voting on the weekend before the election. What I meant was that there would be early voting because, see, a federal U.S. district judge who had ordered the early voting to be allowed, the polling places to be open, the Secretary of State had openly defied him. And the Secretary of State of Ohio, I don't know, maybe his official legal counsel or whatever with his little right-wing lawyer with his or her law degree from the Draw Spunky Pat Robertson School of Law or what have you, said, hey, boss, I just found something out. Yeah, what is that, Murgatroyd? Boss, that judge can put your ass in jail for not opening the polls. I mean, he's serious. Really? Oh, well. And out comes the you misunderstood me press release. So it's a little victory, right?
Right.
But the effort is consistent across this country. And I desperately want people to understand that, and I've mentioned it before, but I might as well drive it home right now. In 1968, in his Take a Message to Washington campaign, Governor George C. Wallace of Alabama advanced the political concept that there is not a dime's worth of difference between a Republican and a Democrat.
I hear that a lot.
Okay. Yeah. And it stuck like glue. You know why it stuck like glue? Because this was about the same time that the Republicans were putting out their so-called Southern strategy. And they looked up and went, oh, damn, that's good. And ran with it. And it was also 1968, which was a very, very unsettled time, right?
Right.
So guess what else comes along? I am not going to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, of course.
And those two little things walk hand in hand down the garden path, and they lead to this place with big blinking lights over it that says, liberal, progressive, disenchantment equals disenfranchisement. Come on in. Just saying.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and this whole thing with the way this election is being is being framed, like there's no difference in two parties. The best answer I can come up with is, if that's true, why are Republicans spending so much goddamn money fighting us?
My God, that sounds like a white paper from the I Got Nothing Institute.
I mean, that's your answer right there.
And I do mean white paper.
White Paper Institute, I like it. But there's your tell right there. Everything has a tell in this world, and you got to look hard enough for it. And there's your tell. Look how hard they're fighting for it. Now you tell me, well, what about the drones? What about this? Well, you know what? All of these issues, I have to be honest with you, they're probably never going to be resolved. They're never going to be resolved. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to vote in Jill Stein? Jill Stein doesn't have a chance. And I hate to tell you this, but the uninformed...
Then let's be clear. I love some of Jill Stein's policy positions.
I like what she's saying, too. But, you know, when she talked to Sam Cedar, and the reason why I keep bringing this up, because it's an interesting discussion to have. Sam put her on the hot spot, whereas a lot of progressives don't. They just listen and they fawn over whatever she's telling them, and they say, oh, my God, I have to contribute. But the problem is you come back to this. Once you give me your vision, people, once you give me your vision, that's great, that's dandy, that's fantastic. But then you have to deal with the political reality. Are you ready for that? And that's when, Bob, that's when people get quiet. That's when they get distinct quiet, and they say, we're going to try our hardest, and they start raising their voice and gulping. And the truth is, you have to come to that. You have to have that certain bravery in your heart. And if you don't, and you can't face up to it, there's a problem.
A big one.
Yeah, and that's the problem I have. And here's the bigger issue. Let's say a candidate like Jill Stein or someone, take your pick, people. Take your pick. Take anyone. Anyone. And put them on the national stage. Do you really think a national audience that is more consumed with Honey Boo Boo Child than the future of our country?
I was kind of hoping to get through the program without the reference.
Well, you know, Bob, I bring this up because guess what? I was in line, and it has nothing to do with Honey Boo Boo Child, but it has to do with this whole reality TV culture. I was in line, and obviously people who were clerks of different age, different ages, both female, were talking about reality TV. And while I was filling my check-in, this is what I was thinking. This is exactly what this goddamn country, check that, the corporate world, the whole entire corporate world wants you to do. They want you to talk about mindless entertainment and not focus on what your wage is, what you're going to be doing in the next 10 years. Just laugh and chuckle.
Yeah, amuse yourselves to death, proles.
Exactly. And, you know, Roger Waters said it best in that song. And I agree with it. And wasn't that amazing, Bob? And here's an example of the craziness that we're facing. Last night, I think we entered the Twilight Zone in the Mike Malloy's world. I think we did. When I was listening, I was like, I can't believe it. Because you have this guy, who I won't say his name, Bob, who calls in.
Yeah, let's...
And then he ridicules. No, but here's the crazy thing, people, if you aren't listening. He ridicules the caller. And then, because this guy is so manipulative, so deceptive, and it's obvious that he was calling constantly to the Malloy house over and over and over again, there were actual people who had contributed to the program, who had had subscriptions, and said, I'm not renewing my subscription the way you talk to Blue. Amazing. Amazing. And to me, there's something scary. There's something frightening about the fact that...
Well, look, I've said time and again.
Yeah.
That it is going to get creepy, ugly, scary, nasty, hateful the closer we get to November the 6th. This whole poor country is going to be vibrating like a struck tuning fork. I mean, we will be out rowing on a sea of gasoline and flicking matches. It's, you know, the 16-year-old, David. Look, we've had to get after our teenagers for some of the crap that went up on Facebook.
You know, Bob,
But not advocating the assassination of the president.
You know, I can outdo you on that one that you said on Twitter, Bob. Did you know that?
What?
There was an actual person in North Carolina who got arrested by the Secret Service for saying the following. I'm a hit President Obama. Excuse me, Agent Fred. I'm not saying this. I'm going to hit President Obama with that Lee Harvey Oswald swag.
Jesus.
Well, and then he said,
and then there was the guy driving around in his truck with an Obama mannequin hanging by a noose.
Right. But here's the sad thing. He goes on.
And I want to be fair. I want to be fair here, David.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to the 8 tormented, miserable years of the Bush administration. And, yes, there was some over-the-top imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember anybody saying, you know, what this 16-year-old said or what that guy said. Nobody.
And here's the tragic thing of it all. This guy.
There was a desperate hope, both in 2004 and in 2008, that the electoral process really would work.
Right.
But the other side, they don't like the electoral process. That's why you've got all these goddamn voter ID laws. Okay? That's why they're there.
I agree with you. And the sad thing about this is that the guy was 21 years old, and I'll leave it at this. He wasn't white. And he said this stuff, and it just goes to show you. I mean, when you have this kind of dysfunctionality in our society, it's only going to get worse.
Well, I mean, look at the hatred being poured out at President Obama from the right-wing fundamentalist churches of color.
Mm.
Or at least they are made to seem like they're really, really this big deal. I don't know if they are or not. Fetuses and he's let down his hair. Oh, Jesus, shut up.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up about the forces against Obama. I really recommend this, Bob. Put this at the top of your list. For people listening, you should watch this too. There was a segment on Bill Moyers from last week about what Ralph Reed's been up to. And it's very, very interesting and concerning at the same time of how much this guy is going for every evangelical he can. They put together this amazing montage of the past year, what he's been up to, the quotes, the fundraising. And it's amazing because, you know, most of our mainstream media is afraid to talk about somebody like Ralph Reed. They're afraid to get in those waters, and they're afraid to bring up anything to do with evangelical Christianity. And the hucksterism that's involved, everyone is deathly afraid because, in some ways, the evangelicals have really won on that front. They've made it so you can't criticize or critique them without getting the wrath of their so-called God put down on you, whatever network you may be.
I've seen time after time after time progressive voices chased from the airwaves by the very tactics that the right wing deplored when we finally sat up on our haunches, I tweeted a couple of things, but no, the people who really busted their ass and created Stop Rush,
Which brings us to this.
Which was subjected to a hellish level of right-wing smear tactics.
Mm. Which brings us to this conclusion of this discussion regarding everything that we were just talking about. There is no way you're going to have progressive radicals on the mainstream stage and people that are, we dream that are going to be there as long as you have that concentration of opposing media. It's not going to happen, people.
Well, and that's why, you know, that's why Malloy spent some, at least two separate moments talking about the Progressive Voices app. There's a link at his site. You scroll down a little bit, and John Sinton, whom I have met, who is a fine, fine man, my God, his lovely wife took, I mean, she absolutely babied our youngest when she got the daylights burned out of her, sunburned on the cruise.
Mm-hmm.
She went in the middle of dinner and got things to put on Doodle's shoulders to make her less miserable. I mean, they are wonderful people, and they're trying to build this online smartphone capable universe that they're calling Progressive Voices. Now, I encourage, and they've got an Indiegogo thing up where they're trying to get people to participate in building it.
Right.
And I sincerely hope they are successful. And I say this as somebody who is not even listed as one of the talkers there. This is not Bob promoting Bob. This is Bob trying to promote the idea of taking some next step, David, into a universe that the right wing cannot control.
I agree with you. And here's what I would say to people about President Obama who are disappointed with him, a bit, maybe some anger toward him. Here's what I would say. Every day, he has to make multiple decisions with such a limited amount of time. He's going to get so many decisions wrong. That's just the way it is. And if you can't deal with that, then I'll tell you what. Set up a virtual reality world of your presidential candidate and see how he or she fares. If it's a really accurate world in which we live in, you're going to get the same blocks and barricades that Obama's up at.
Well, you know, we just got a very interesting email. Andy in California is always very perceptive.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, David, the corporations want us to focus on bread and circuses as they outsource our jobs and don't pay state or federal taxes. The screws are being turned as deindustrialization continues. They know the middle class is shrinking and depend on the public remaining torpid, comfortably numb as their world crumbles around them. The corporations do not add value to our society. They are parasites on the body politic. And I think even Adam Smith recognized this in The Wealth of Nations. That's why The Wealth of Nations is far different from what you see in American corporate law and corporate legal policy and corporate public policy today. That's why what the right wing is advocating has nothing to do with Adam Smith. They hardly even talk about him anymore. Because if people actually go and read it, oh, man, a totally different thing. That's why everything is about, you know, Ayn Rand, for Christ's sakes. But there's a phrase in Andy's email here that I want to point out, and I find it because, he says the deindustrialization.
Yeah.
Well, that is, you know, that's a function of outsourcing. Bishop Willard Romney has done a ton of it. He has helped to deindustrialize the United States. Some of us think that there is a value to having an industrial base in the country because that's where decent wage jobs are. You are never going to create a middle class even on management jobs at McDonald's. Okay? You're just not gonna. And I say McDonald's because McDonald's has historically paid more than Burger King, Wendy's, Arby's, and the lot. Okay?
Right.
They pay a higher wage. So that, you know, that's about as good as it gets. At least, well, not food-wise. But you get the idea. But this idea of deindustrialization is very real. It is happening. It is being accomplished by the right wing, by people like Bishop Willard Romney. But dig this, David.
Yeah.
I have heard people who are about as far from being right-wing or Republican or teabagger as one human being can be. People that are way out there to the left, okay? Mm-hmm. Left of me, if that's possible. Say that their dream, their dream. This is a quote.
Yeah.
Is the deindustrialization of America.
Well, you know, it goes back to...
Well, if you deindustrialize America, David, aren't you just saying that you want to go back to feudalism?
That brings up the, you know, the discussion with what Naomi Klein was talking about. With that world of capitalism, just destroying everything in process, just destroying everything in progress so you can make a profit off it.
Right. That's why economies have to be managed, and I'm no economist.
Right.
But economies have to be managed to prevent the corporate culture from indulging in the worst of its inherent nature, from indulging in its tendencies toward the most horrible excesses. And that's the regulation, of course, that the Republican Party despises.
Mm.
Right?
It's, you know, it's the blunted reality that we are faced with. This is the problem that we're going to have to deal with over and over and over again. That balance of utopia, vision, and somehow bringing that just a little bit into reality. Our hopes and our dreams, just a little bit of that into reality. But the big problem we face right now is that we're treading water right now, and we're just trying to stay afloat. And that's what we need to keep doing. And that brings me back to why people keep voting for Democrats, why people aren't contributing to third parties. Because the problem is they're looking at their kids, they're looking at their investments toward humanity, toward bringing anything good in this world, and they look around and they see what's happening. So, people, I really wouldn't be hard on people who are not voting third parties. These are tough choices we're making. And you know what? Here's the other thing.
And this is not me crawling up on the cross or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I said everything I said about the use of the filthy, filthy phrase. And then I said, but I'm voting for the guy. Now that, and I'm sure there are people out there going, F him.
And here's the other thing before I go. As a progressive, if you are truly ultra-mega progressive, as I said, membership cards are coming, believe me. But if you are ultra-mega progressive, you should have that also in your heart for that forgiveness. If it happens down the line that you happen to be right, just understand. We're going along with what we feel is the best route for our kids and our future. And if you're not that type of progressive, then I really wouldn't call you progressive if you can't have that kind of forgiveness in your heart for those situations that come along.
I think that's a fair assessment. Thank you, David.
All right. And with that, Bob, before I go, everyone should contribute to Head On Radio Network. You should contribute with your time, monetarily if you can, and let's keep the conversation going. And I hope everybody understands that all we're doing, people, is we're facing the blunted reality. That's all we're doing.
I think there's much truth in what you say, David.
Have a nice weekend, Bob, and I hope things definitely start to pick up in the world of the AIC Act in terms of people, and we get rid of this clean coal frame, and we make Appalachia, and more importantly, the entire world a better, safer environment for all our children and our future's sake.
Yeah, so that we can get to that world where there's a hydroponic car flying along the Trans Island Skyway, right?
Yes, and just to bring that bookend at the last minute, just so you know, Bob, it's good you played Donald Fagen because his album has been mastered and mixed. And Donald Fagen, I believe, is about to release his album in October or possibly spring, but it's coming very soon.
Oh, Lordy, I could use some good news.
Well, there you go, Bob.
Thanks, David.
All right, have a nice night.
You too. Bye now. Our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Fox is Andy.
Hey, Andy, what's up?
Also known as Boris Johnson, Bob.
Yes, yes, yes.
Bob, I was so happy to hear your John Burton from California mention Joseph Goebbels, the big eye. I listened to your show, Bob. I know you mentioned that.
You know, we're tickled. That means, Boris, that means you're staying up till 1, 2 in the morning some nights.
Yes, exactly. You have a wonderful show, Bob. A wonderful show. I will try to send you some money out of the coffers of the Tory party. How about that, Bob?
You know, just a little checker from the exchequer would be dandy.
Okay, I'll talk to Mr. Osborne about that, Bob.
Yeah, get right on that, would you?
Okay. You know, Bob, this Paul Ryan, you know, again, he makes our Maggie Thatcher look like a piker, Bob.
He makes Maggie look like a Girl Scout.
Right. This Paul Ryan, he will fix your little people. All those little working people, he will fix them. And he will also make Joseph Goebbels look like Cinderella, Bob. He is the real deal. He is the real deal, this Paul Ryan. He will fix all you working class people. He will get you.
Because we need fixing. Hey, Andy, in all seriousness, I appreciate you using that phrase deindustrialization like I mentioned with David. Because the weird thing is that, you know, like I said, on the one hand, you've got the right-wingers actively doing it, and on the other hand, you've got some folks out on the woohoo fringe of the left rooting them on.
You know, Bob, in Europe, they use that term all the time, particularly in that campaign in France with Francois Hollande, who won for the socialists in France.
Yeah.
They use deindustrialization all the time. You know, telling what was happening in France, and he was committed to stopping it. And you don't hear our politicians, and if the Democrats would start saying that, they could get a lot of traction out of it. Because Lord knows that is the problem. We've been deindustrialized, and we have to really...
Well, yeah, I mean, isn't that at the very heart of what Bishop Willard Romney wanted to do when Detroit, well, when the automakers were on the verge of collapse? Wasn't that an overt demand for deindustrialization? I mean, are you and I talking about the same concept here?
Yeah, exactly. That is what made Mr. Romney, you know, Mr. Romney is made off of deindustrialization. That's what his firm does. And part of the consulting business, part of what their value add was when they went and did an LBO, a leveraged buyout of a company, is they taught the management they had in there of how to outsource. That was their specialty.
And see, I remember back in, what was it, the late 80s? Was it the late 80s when we had the rise of the corporate raider and people like Carl Icahn? Have I got the name right? Wasn't he one of them? And they would come in and do what was known then as a hostile takeover, right so far?
Yeah, well, he's still playing that game, Carl Icahn.
Well, they would come in and do a hostile takeover, and by hostile takeover, it meant that they would come in and bring a horse-gagging load of money into a publicly traded corporate situation, and they would take it over whether anybody wanted them to or not. Is that basically the gist of it? Well, I lost Andy. Damn. But what's fascinating out of that is that Bishop Willard Romney refined that process. No longer were we going to have the raiders coming in, and or what was referred to as barbarians at the gates. That was out of the RJR fiasco, I think, that phrase. But instead, the Bain people worked a much softer form, because what they would do is they would come in and buy off and bribe the ownership of the corporation and promise them horse-gagging amounts of money so that they would cooperate in the destruction of the company to whom they owed a fiduciary benefit, a fiduciary duty in the first place. A fiduciary duty meaning a duty that is the highest position of trust cognizable at law. And so the corporate leadership of Amalgamated Widget would say, well, sure, Bishop Willard Romney, we'll sell to you, after Bishop Willard Romney had promised to make them wealthier than their wildest dreams, right? Then they would turn around and outsource it and put all the working people out on their asses and Katie barred the door. I mean, of course, we now know because of journalism that's been published that Bishop Willard Romney was a huge receiver of corporate welfare from the federal government that he then used to stick it to working people when Bain itself was about to go under. Jesus, the hypocrisy is just gagging. Let's see if this is Andy again. Are you back, Andy? Hello? Well, I was hoping that might have been. Okay. Line ringing here. I'll move on if this isn't Andy calling back. Is that you, Andy? Andy. Oh, there you are. There you are.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. Sorry I lost you.
Oh, that was my fault. You know, I tried to switch from the earphone over to my mobile phone because I wasn't hearing you so great. You know, I heard, you know, you're talking about Willard Romney and what he did. And, yes, that's what happened during the 90s. That was all when, like, Barbarians at the Gate, when Nabisco did its major takeovers and the LBOs. And Milken was going strong, doing the big debt offerings. And they leveraged these companies up with the debt provided by Michael Milken.
Right, but when the Raiders did that, they either killed the company outright or they vastly reduced its personnel, but the company stayed in the country, right? Whereas
well, originally,
with this,
yeah, they would just burden them with so much debt that they had to streamline and make the company as efficient as possible, you know, and get rid of some employees, try to
right, which
them.
Means, you know, one person doing the work of four and that kind of thing. But then this sort of softer version comes along as executed by Bain, and they come in and they do the same thing that the hostile takeover LBO people did, but they did it from the inside out, and then they again saddled the company with debt and choked it to death in the process.
Right. Right.
These people are economic thugs.
Yeah, they're predatory. They're predatory capitalists. It shouldn't be done. And they can make a pool of money that they put together. That's why it's called private equity, mainly from wealthy people. And unfortunately, union pension funds or state pension funds give them money. They put it in a big pool, and they use it when they find decent takeover targets. And then they try to get other partners in on it, and they just try to make sure that they get their fees out of the situation, or they get their money out as quick as possible. And as soon as they can issue that debt, a lot of times they can take their equity out and they make an instant break even on it, and then everything after that
is gravy.
Is icing on the cake. Exactly. And that's what he's living off of. Romney continues to live off of that $20 million a year he gets from Bain and all these funds is all the icing that is the pension funds of the workers that were there and all the other cash from these cash cow companies that were actually doing very well that he's still sucking, you know, living off of. And basically he's a bloodsucker, just a complete predatory bloodsucker. And that's how he made his money. That's how his family and his sons get their $20 million trust funds off the backs of working people. And I'll tell you, he is a killer and he is a murderer in my mind, because when you take a working man and you destroy his job and he has no health care and his wife gets cancer and she dies because she can't get the proper care. Mitt Romney murdered that woman. I don't care what kind of spin the Republicans try to.
Yeah,
make.
They murdered people. It's a hired hit. It is procurement of murder.
Right.
And it is, and you know, the law tends to view that as the same thing as pulling the trigger. So
right.
Yeah, I'm sorry the Romney campaign doesn't care for it, but it's the damn truth. You know, I saw those two people who were came up to speak at the Democratic convention. And talked about what had happened when Bain took over their healthy company and then destroyed it.
Right.
And my heart went out to them. God, I mean, you know, everything that is supposed to be the right response of a human being was there. I was swamped in heartfelt emotion for them.
Right.
And a desire to see better done by them.
Right. A lot of these companies are profitable. Enterprise. The worst, of course, was GS Technologies grinding steel in Kansas City that had been around for about 100 years. And Romney takes that over. He puts about $300 million of debt on it, and the company just can't handle the debt burden, and finally they slowly go bankrupt. And there are you know, it's like a dozen cases where they did that, and they leveraged them up with the debt, and they couldn't handle the debt burden. And these were going concerns, very profitable. And even that, with that Senyata company, is supposed to be very, very profitable. That they're shipping in Illinois, I think it's Fort Worth or something like that, Illinois, where they're shipping that whole company off to China. And the workers went down. There was another one, a Scripps company, the old typewriter people in Indiana that they took over that was doing some other type of, mechanical, low-level machinery work that was very profitable, that they completely ran into the ground, and the workers, again, this thing where they had to retrain the foreign workers.
You know, I remember when Bishop Willard Romney ran for president the first time in 2008, and we were mostly just talking about the only thing he ever did that made him look like a genius was buying Staples. My God. What a simpler time that was, right, Andy?
Well, that was part of, they had a venture capital unit also where they did investment in, you know, going concerns that were regular companies that were just starting up, and Staples was one of those startups. And that was a venture capital deal that they did, not really a private equity deal. And that was a small proportion of Bain's business.
Well, it's
still there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm right here because this is, I mean, this just makes my eyes cross, Andy. Late in the program last night, Jim mentioned this story about some group allegedly having accessed Bishop Willard Romney's tax returns, and that the drop dead date is September 28th. You know, I'm sitting here praying that it's true.
Well, there was a guy.
This is more of a psychology question than an economics question, but if the American people get to see what an absolute predator Willard Romney has been via his tax returns, will that be enough to make them say no, oh hell no, or will he remain viable because, you know, we've got that one in our White House?
I think the propaganda machine that the Republicans got going, I don't think that makes, I don't think people will get it, you know, unfortunately. And a guy named Stewart wrote in the New York Times, he does a column every Saturday, and he went through the taxes that Romney did have. And a lot of it is foreign tax credits is what he's given. This form 1116 that supposedly has been revised four times, but he's doing all these foreign investments. And that's the problem with the wealthy people and this whole trickle-down supply-side baloney. When wealthy people get money, they don't invest it here. They diversify, and usually their diversification where they can get larger returns, you know, off the real high-margin investments, is overseas.
Yeah.
That's what Willard was doing. He's investing overseas, and he's getting these huge tax credits that are nullifying his federal taxes here by doing
because he gets a break, because the theory is that one should not be subjected to double taxation, right?
Right, right. He's paying taxes on these foreign investments, and he's getting a dollar for dollar tax benefit.
Yeah. So the question is, if he's getting a dollar for dollar tax break in, say, China, wouldn't he be better off living in China? Isn't that where his interests lie?
You know, I've been thinking about that for a long time. I like to see a lot of these CEOs go off to China, especially this guy from Intel, Paul Ottolini, who keeps saying to the state of California, we're not going to build here because you don't give us enough tax breaks, tax credits to build our foundries for Intel. We're going to go to China. Well, if I were the state, and I'd like to just go to him, go to China, and you personally go to China, and you live in a totalitarian regime, and if you even wipe your nose the wrong way there, you'll be friggin' waterboarded and given a Jose Padilla, my man. Why don't you just do that and go to China? I don't know why they don't, because they're not Americans. They're not Americans at all.
Yeah, here, buddy, I've already got your letter ready. I've written to the Chinese embassy telling them that you are the leader of Falun Gong in the United States, and you've got two healthy kidneys. Bye now.
Right. These CEOs have got big balls, big effing balls, and somebody ought to just, you know, take them to task and take them up on it and say, either you play by our rules. That's the problem, too. You know, we don't have an efficient, effective government where we have all the laws in place that our government can really fight this. And they won't go after the taxes that are justly necessary for our society to run, like Apple, computer. You know, Rick Smith talks about the Delaware loophole. Well, we have the Nevada loophole here, where everything Apple makes, they pay no state taxes, nothing. Because everything goes to Reno, Nevada, because they have a Reno, Nevada loophole, because there's no state taxes in Nevada. So everything gets filtered there. So, it just goes, and we need a government that can, you know, tell these people, if you're not going to play by them, get out of here.
But is there
us no good? You don't hire any people here.
But let me ask you this, Andy. Is there a natural self-destructive end in all of this predatory behavior? Because ultimately in human experience, that's what happens. When you just let your worst impulses run wild, you wind up wrapping your car around a phone pole, or sunk in the depths of addiction, or any number of other awful things that, you know, that where the universe steps in and teaches you a lesson.
Well, talk about fouling your own nest. I mean, that's what they're doing. They live here. They live in they want an environment.
I mean, do they just not?
South America, the haves and have-nots, and that's it. And it's just a feudal society.
But
and
do they? I mean, do they?
Out of your gated community without somebody robbing your ass.
And that's I guess
child?
That's what I'm asking. Is this a matter of, you know, Bill Clinton talked about, you know, nobody's ever won who bet against America. Okay, it made for a great soundbite.
Yeah,
but
for cooperation.
But the question is, have we reached a point where that's what they're doing? I mean, with emerging markets like Brazil and arguably China and India, are these massive transnational corporations now able to simply say, screw America, we don't need the American market like we used to, so F them if the middle class goes away and they become a feudal society? Then maybe we'll bring them back some jobs and pay them $2 a day. I mean, is that some of what's at work here?
Certainly. If they can get away with it, they'll do it. Anything they can do to boost profits. But the Brazilians, there's been articles written about Brazil. Brazil tells these companies, you cannot import here. You cannot build an iPhone in China and ship it into Brazil. No, no, no. We will not allow that. You must build the iPhone here, and then you can sell it here. And that is what Brazil has said to Apple. You build it here, the iPads too, you build it here, or you don't sell nothing. Zippo. Nada. And what did Apple do? They told Foxconn, get your asses over to Brazil and start building plants so we can sell iPods and iPhones in Brazil. And that's what they did. And they had to hire Brazilian workers to do it. We have to do the same thing here. You tell Apple you cannot. But that's a problem, Bob. Our government has been so ineffective, and they've been made so docile, and so you know all the guts and verve taken out of it, that our government won't and our politicians won't take on these CEOs and these corporate boards and tell them, no, 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 you cannot make it in China with these very advanced manufacturing processes and sell your products here. You cannot. And that's what we have
to do. But I think realistically, Andy, we kind of have to say that our current interpretation and the body that currently interprets the Constitution and statutes of the United States would work actively to prevent any sort of thing such as you described with Brazil from happening, because structurally we are built to support wealth, not wealth equity, we're not constitutionally structured to support the rise of the middle class. We are constitutionally structured to preserve the wealth in the hands where the wealth exists.
Well, what we need is a great leader, somebody like a Teddy Roosevelt, who goes in and says, well, you know, this is the way things have been done in the past, but we're no longer continuing down that route, and we're going to change things, and we're going to put the legislation into effect that does change things. We need.
I mean, it's like third party politics. I am not opposed to third party politics, Andy. I'm not. But if you want third party politics, it is going to take a serious amendment to the Constitution, if not an entirely new constitutional convention, to get it done, because you're going to have to change the structure away from this dualistic system.
Well, if you really want to get more than two parties, yeah, and get more like a European system where there is proportional representation, more like a parliamentary system, yeah, there's got to be some wholesale changes. But there's nothing to say that one of the two parties now can't go away.
And see, that well, is like that's traditionally what happens in the United States.
Right.
We one have two parties, and when one party falls away, its remnant, its rump, forms the nucleus for a new party.
Right.
The Whigs fell away, and the Republican Party formed around what remained. The Democratic Party stopped being the Democratic Party of the Old South and became the Democratic Party that we know or knew through the Johnson years and the Carter years, and then was radically transformed in the early 90s.
Right.
I think you understand absolutely all the way down to the ground.
Yeah, when the current structure, like you said, the way the Constitution, the way our system is currently structured, it makes it very, very difficult for there to be any more than two parties.
Yeah, as long as it's winner take all.
The others are ineffective, right. The first around the post and the winner take all, which is really only done in England and here, the Anglo systems that we have,
yeah,
versus the Germanic systems in Europe, which are more egalitarian, much more egalitarian.
Well, the Germanic and the Gallic,
votes
you know.
Count, right. Your votes at least count. I know you went over this with David, but it is a shame if we had a European Germanic system, you could vote for a third party and it would actually have some value. You could, but now.
And those parties would grow and flourish to the extent that they were able to address the needs of the people.
Right. The only advantage is now is if the Green Party does get over 5% of the national vote, they do get matching funds.
Right.
Us.
Well, I mean, God, even that's a double-edged sword. That's why, when I was overseas, that's why I was able to see little neo-Nazi stickers on light poles in Wachendorf, because the neo-Nazis had gotten 5% and were then able to get federal funding.
Right.
I mean, it cuts both ways. You know, God forbid, you know, you'll You'll notice that there's no serious third-party candidacy out there in Republican land. You'll notice that for all the Ron Paul Revolution stickers that you see on the back of rusty pickup trucks and so forth, that there ain't no Ron Paul third-party candidacy.
Man, the fix was in there, wasn't it?
Well, you know, look.
Crushed that movement.
Well, no. I don't think they did, Andy. I think Ron Paul.
At the convention, they did.
Ron Paul. Yeah, well, sure they did. But and you'll notice that Ron Paul wasn't out there screaming about it either. Now, was he? No, his followers were. Because guess what Ron Paul's doing? Ron Paul, for as much of a freaky little anti-American pissant that I think he is, Ron Paul is working now to create a network that he will hand over to his son, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, okay? Because Rand Paul wants to be president. If Romney fails in this election, you will see a duke it out battle. And I've been wrong before, and I'm ready to be wrong again, but you will see a mano a mano, bared fisticuffs battle between zombie-eyed granny starver Ryan and libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul in 2016. Write it down.
That sounds accurate.
And the thing is,
and Rand Paul is not going to back down from fight.
Right, and the thing is, Rand Paul is
fighters, and he's going to give it a pop, I'm sure.
You know, in September 2012, it is advantage Rand Paul because his daddy will turn that entire benighted weirdo organization right over to his son.
Right, and you got all those teabaggers.
I do like to come up with things that I don't think other people are necessarily thinking about at the time. Andy, it's been a wonderful conversation. My best to Boris. Tell him we'll haunt the mailbox and watch for the Exchequer's checker.
Hey, one thing. You know, Preston mentioned Enid Goldstein.
Yes.
On your show, and I used to live in Sacramento, where Enid used to have a show.
Yeah.
And one thing about her, you know, Preston thought she was a real good progressive. She is totally, totally behind the Zionist movement of Israel. Anything Israel does gets a free ride with her, and she will bend Israel to the hilt. So to call her a progressive is a real stretch.
Well, I mean, but she's progressive on everything else, right?
Or Zionist. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing you run up against in some quarters of our little ragtag universe. I mean, we used to have a decent guy on this network who was as progressive as the day is long. But, man, you know, Israel uber alles.
Right. Right. Anything the Palestinians do, you know, they're just basically the intruders.
Well, there's no such thing as Palestinians. Palestinians are animals. All those things Norman Podhoretz said in the past. Yeah. Andy, have yourself... Have yourself a great weekend.
Talk about Cardinal Carlo Murillo Martini if you have a chance, huh?
I will. Got a bunch of phone calls lined up, though, so that may have to wait till next week.
On Wednesday.
Okay.
Your big religious day. Anyway, have a good weekend, Bob. Take care.
All right, shoot me a link or something, and I'll educate myself even further. Thank you, Andy.
All right. I already did. But I'll send it again.
Okay. I'm sorry. I may have missed it. Wednesday was a bad day.
All right.
See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Andy calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, it's Dave here on the Pacific Coast overlooking the ocean. And at this time on every Friday evening, I guess in cities across the country, we have our Vets for Peace vigils trying to end our involvement in the war efforts and whatnot. So
nice.
I may quickly, I don't know, but I'm happy to report that I have been able to listen to your show today. I haven't been able to check in on the chat room. I've been trying, but...
I know. I myself have had problems with the chat room because of a couple of recent Java updates that are just driving me quite mad.
Yeah, that tends to happen at times. in any event, for my own very clear reasons, I have for a long time been terribly suspicious of our election process. I believe that electronic voting machines never should have happened. And we've discussed this before, and I know that you share much of those concerns, that particularly those that leave you no kind of paper record anywhere, just touch screens that can't be recounted.
Yeah, not even so much as a receipt like you'd get at an ATM.
Yes. I am also of the belief that a machine can hand you a piece of paper that says, thank you for voting for the peace and freedom, and at the same time cast 150 votes to the Republican. So I think these things can happen. So anyway, if I get interrupted all of a sudden, it's because I'm out here in the park where we stand our vigil. I think you've touched a little bit on tonight one of the things I have found to be true. That is, I have friends here that have local radio stations, and I brought up the possibility of connecting, broadcasting your show, a couple of others that I regard as good, Mike Malloy and whatnot, and I find that they're not able to do that if they try to get a hold of you. There are some sponsors, I think, that would like very much to contribute and have it known that they are backing what you're about, and they find that they're not able to do that.
Well, I don't know why. They've never made that contact and made that ask, that's for sure.
Well, there are some good people.
I mean, the email comes in and the phones ring, and I've never heard from them, because I get a call like that, I'll be dancing up and down in abject joy, because we are facing as hard a time as we have ever faced before, and we're facing it right now.
Well, I was blocked out for a long period of time from your head-on radio network, so I don't know what's become of some of the old shows that you used to air. But I know that local here, there's been calls made to Guy James wanting to know, could they possibly...
Well, Guy James hasn't been on the air regularly for years.
Okay, well, I don't know. See, I've been away from it too for a long time.
The same thing happened with Guy that happened with so many other of the intrepid people who tried to get the horn going in the first few years, and that is that people cannot work for nothing. And what we solicit, Dave, to try to just keep things on the air, like I said earlier, is to keep things on the air. It's not to support a lifestyle. It is not to not to make house payments. It's not even to fix a leaky roof. Okay, it is to keep this effort going. And so, we had tremendously talented people who could not go any further because they had to figure out some way to stay alive in an economy that is nothing short of brutal. And so when the economy melted down, Guy had to go and look toward keeping his family fed and keeping the lights on. And I miss him every day.
I
want to make it abundantly clear, no one has emailed me, no one has called me, okay? No one at all.
Well, I have a manager friend here of one station that you might enjoy having a chit chat with on his episode.
But the other problem is that for me to go on for the horn to go on terrestrial radio would require the purchase of a delay that would keep the dirty words off of censored FCC airwaves. We don't have one of those. And so that probably is a disincentive for anybody to pick up our our stream.
Yes, well, that you'd find you could deal with that. I know you could, but you don't. You're not compulsive about your need to use any language that, if you knew you had to clean it up for the airways, you'd do it.
Oh yeah, the list has grown considerably shorter, but the words are still there, and each violation costs every station that makes that carries the bad word something on the order of $475,000.
I'm sure it comes as no surprise to you to know that the bureaucracy as it is in power now does not welcome programs, good programs such as your own, to be aired all over the country. They do welcome having Hannity and Fox, Limbaugh, but they don't welcome a show of your type. That comes as no surprise.
No. Nobody. Remember, most of the radio stations in this country are either owned by outright right-wingers or are owned by corporations that were allowed by the Telecommunications Act of 1996 to consolidate holdings of radio licenses. Most of those corporations are right-wing in nature. The progressive voice, the progressive ideal, the liberal school of thought is not welcome on the airwaves that are deemed to be so-called public. Okay? They're not. If you recall back during the days of Air America, a memo went around telling people with companies saying, you know, do not advertise on Air America. We do not want our brand associated with those liberals. And, you know, it was innocuous stuff like, I don't know, soup. Because I guess they don't want to sell soup to those dirty effing liberals, right? So, you know, I mean, that's the reality. But, Dave, I'm glad you hung on, and I'm glad we got to talk, and I'm going to try to get through the rest of the lineup tonight. I really hope we talk soon, okay?
Right.
Take care, and my best to the Veterans for Peace out there. They are needed very much. Our buddy Dave calling from Northern California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. First and foremost, thank you for helping out.
Glad I'm able to. Sorry to hear you've lost a couple funding sources.
It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I guess we could call this an existential crisis of the horn.
Definitely. And it really shouldn't be. But, you know, I think maybe some liberals see you as too radical, and there's all sorts of structural impediments, and but it's been nice for however long you're able to sustain this. It's been very much appreciated.
Well, we're not going to go away without trying to raise the money to keep going and raising the hell necessary. No, I know we are not welcome in certain circles, Preston. We don't participate in, I don't know how to put this. There is a certain bargain made for access. If you want to have Senator Thumbfingers on your show and you want him to act like he really, really likes you, well, you are by definition therefore required not to ever say anything bad that Senator Thumbfingers cares about.
Yep.
And that may include the Democratic Party generally.
Yep.
Now I can never make a deal like that, Preston, because for instance I live in a state with a Democratic Party that is absolutely vomit inducing.
Yep. You know, and I think that's how, you know, some of the supporters of the Green Party feel, that they just can't make some of the deals anymore, and they're kind of sickened by the drone murders and the clean coal and, you know, pushing the natural.
And I understand all of that.
And
I really do.
Trade. And I understand why people would vote for Obama and how they were moved by the convention. So we can have both of these things. It's not an either or.
Yeah, I'm voting for him despite what he said about clean coal last night.
Right.
Because those auto workers who still have jobs matter to me. and you know, women not dying of hemorrhages in back alleys because of the twisted notions of some freak from Wisconsin, well, that matters to me too.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And there's more, and I think some radicals have stayed in the party and have tried to shift it in progressive directions with some success. For instance, we have a representative from Colorado who spoke at the convention, one of the earlier talks, Jared Polis. He made a ton of money in software development stuff, and he made some history, actually. He was the first openly gay person elected to, I think, U.S. representative. Like the others, like Barney Frank, they came out later. Anyway, one of the first. Anyway, very pro-gay, pro-pot, big time. He ran ads, actually, when he was running for office. The ads he was running were they were radical. They were going after, like, Halliburton and military spending. So that energy is in there, too. And, but, you know, inside and outside approaches. And I wanted to thank David in Maine for alerting me to that Jill Stein interview with Sam Cedar. I looked that up, and I just listened to, like, the first half of it, and I was really impressed with Jill Stein. I'd heard her a few times before, but she really was in her groove in that talk. I felt like I kind of came away from it with a different impression of the green movement than David had, but be that as it may, very impressed. I thought she made a lot of very important points, and yeah, maybe they would get scorched if they got in office, but they get scorched beforehand. And so, you know, you kind of do what you can where you can, I think.
Yeah, and see, if there's, I take the position, Preston, that if there is to be any hope in the system as it presently exists, and it's something that I've mentioned a million times if I've mentioned it once, and that is this, primaries. Primaries.
Yeah, there too.
Primaries are the means by which parties select their general election candidates. I, for one, don't believe that independents or anybody, I don't believe in open primaries. I think if the Green Party wants to have a primary, they should have a nominating convention or a primary or whatever suits them. But if the Democrats are having a primary, Democrats should select the party nominee. Republicans should select their party nominees. Yeah. And if we want progressive candidates, we've got to run them in the primaries, and we got to fund them.
Yeah.
And you know, that's that $2 and $3 model that Howard Dean built that is being so successfully used. You know, the other side of that is things like the New York Working Families Party that can nominate somebody else's party nominee, and you can still go and vote working families, but by the same token, you're not drawing votes away from a candidate that you otherwise would support.
There's the fusion voting.
Yeah, there are.
Democrats are blocking all the time. You know, they posture and they blame the Greens for being spoilers, and at every turn, the Democratic establishment blocks efforts to remediate that problem, like the fusion voting efforts. And if they really want to, you know, there's so many people for them to register. There are so many people who have lost their right to vote that would certainly be voting Democratic. African Americans and Latino people who are being put in cages for a phony, oppressive, tyrannical drug war. And, you know, Clinton actually intensified it.
Sure.
And it's the Green Party that...
Well, look, I mean, it was under Clinton that we first saw the rise, Preston, of the private prison industrial complex.
There you go.
I remember when a little town in West Virginia that whose entire economy just about had been based upon the presence there of a state hospital for the mentally ill. I remember, you know, it was Ronald Reagan went a long way toward shutting all of those state hospitals down under the guise of being humane, but what he was doing was raiding the was allowing Republicans to raid the funding that supported those hospitals for the mentally ill.
Yeah.
And so the people who needed those services were simply turned out on the street. Well, I remember in a little town in West Virginia that had had that mental health facility. It was a huge hospital, okay? And it went away. And the economic salvation that was proposed was to build a private for-profit prison in the same county that would employ roughly the same number, you know, of people at much lower paying jobs and bring in people from God knows where to warehouse them. And that was during, you know, that was during the Clinton administration. I remember it very well.
Yeah, yeah. Good points, all of them. One last point real quickly regarding some of the structural impediments. And I think this goes for not just political campaigns, but for media efforts, organic food efforts, small businesses right down the line. In the 2004 election, and I think we can agree that this should not be happening either. I was reading a book by Teresa Amato called Grand Illusion, and she talks about some of those impediments to third-party efforts. In 2004, Nader and Camejo, I think was his running mate, they had 25 lawsuits filed against them to squash the campaign from Democrats. So we hear the story about how the GOP may have put some money into their campaign, although Nader goes into the details of where that money was coming from and what the conditions on it were and stuff. But anyway, in the same time, and I think that Democrats should answer for this, they were filing all these, slap lawsuits, strategic litigation against public participation lawsuits to drain the campaign of funds, to keep them tied up in courts. It was shameful. And then their volunteers getting Nader signatures being spat on and ridiculed and cursed at by liberals. It was an outrage. It was anti-democratic to its core.
And once again, it is another form of voter suppression.
It is. Exactly. Exactly. One other last point. I know you've got other callers, and I'd love to hear what they have to say. But regarding Enid Goldstein, I take the previous caller's point. She is a supporter of the Israeli government. I have had another friend here who refused to call her ever and kind of dismissed her for that same reason. And he said, she's a Zionist. Well, you know, yes. And we disagreed on that, and she's open to disagreement. I called her for about a year or so when she had a program here in Denver. And I think 90% of her positions are very progressive. So that's why I don't think it's a stretch at all to call her such. Beyond that, kind of how she carries herself, how she deals with people who disagree with her, I think is progressive as well. I think there's a real problem with we find something in the other, whether it's a person like Noam Chomsky or an organization or whatever, and we dismiss the whole thing. I'm not wording that quite right, but instead of constructive criticism, there's kind of easy dismissals I'm seeing all the time, and it's like the opposite of solidarity. And if you ever check out Enid Goldstein, she does a little show in Michigan now after she got bounced from that Sacramento station and replaced by All Sports All the Time. Because she didn't get popular support. You know, that stuff can happen more easily. So now she's in Michigan, very small station, a couple hours a week. But she filled in here in Denver last week. And once again, she was utterly brilliant. I didn't agree with all her points, but she's magic. And so if people get a chance to check her out. In fact, I was thinking, Bob, I would love to see you, possibly you and she collaborating and strengthening the horn. Who knows? Something to mull over anyway. And if you ever need a substitute host.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That one of the problems that exists here, I mean, I've seen that question come up in the past. Bob, why do we get reruns when you have to be gone? Why can't you get a substitute host? It's a different animal altogether.
Yeah.
I don't have any way of transferring the phone lines to somebody who isn't here. The only way it can work on the road is if Agnes is sitting behind the board here fielding calls and feeding them to me remotely, and even that is a bit of a dicey proposition.
I see.
So when somebody, for instance, like Brad Friedman, who is a dear friend, fills in for our good friend Malloy. You know, they're uplinking to a satellite that's going out to terrestrial affiliates, going to Sirius, whatever. And it is an entirely different kettle of fish than what's going on here. My God, if I tried to transfer these phone lines, I actually looked into it once, Preston, and it would have taken a month's fundraising just to do that. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I agree. My thinking, now that you say that, I'm wondering if, who knows, maybe someone like Enid could bring some resources along those lines. She's been in radio a long time. She might have some connections or find something on Craigslist for you. Who knows? But I just wanted to float the thought out there.
And, well, I know Ben Birch thought very highly of her, or thinks very highly of her as well, because he archived her for a considerable period of time there at White Rose.
Oh, great. Excellent.
And so I was aware of her name before I heard it. I don't want to shut, I don't want, as an oppressed person, Preston, I don't want to oppress anybody else. I really, really don't. When the Zionist stuff comes up, I mean, I'm not going to moderate my position, and the Israel Uberalis folks are not going to moderate theirs. And I frankly hate being caught up in that war to the death between tastes great and less filling.
Yeah, and I also don't really like the use of that term Zionist as, just a derogatory term. Zionist comes in lots of shapes.
Well, I don't use it as a pejorative.
I don't think you do, but, sometimes it's kind of inferred that way.
I mean, frankly, my use of the phrase Israel Uber Alles is a hell of a lot more insulting. It just came out of my mouth. I apologize.
I understand.
But Zionism is a thing that side created. It's a word they created for themselves. Prior to the enactment of the Balfour Declaration.
Yeah.
It has taken on other meanings, if it is freighted with other meanings, Preston, that's a function of linguistic evolution over time. The pro-Israel lobby, or, There's no nice way to refer to that conflict, is what it boils down to.
It's kind of like apartheid. There's no progressive apartheid system. In fact, some apartheid people who suffered under that system have gone to the occupied territories in solidarity and have said, whoa, this is worse than apartheid.
Right. And I mean, I have sat here behind this microphone, Preston, and said, I feel a great deal of kinship. And they might not feel it with me. Because I don't feel a kinship with their religion because of the way I feel about religion. But as oppressed peoples, I feel a greater degree of kinship with, say, a Palestinian in Gaza than I do, some guy who has a good job and public health care benefits in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And it
has
nothing to do with religion. It has to do with the nature of what it feels like to be an oppressed person.
Yeah, I'm sure they would see the parallels. You being in a community of people that's lived off the land for generations, and they're losing access to that land.
Well,
someone who's got their water being polluted.
It happened 120 years ago with something called the Broad Form Deed in Appalachia, Preston. The coal companies, the railroad companies, the land holding companies came in here and stole the land. Out from under people who already had three or four or five generations on it.
Yeah.
And the people were dispossessed, they were enslaved, and they were forced to work in a coal mono economy that killed them. That's our freaking history. And I'm not yelling at you, you understand.
I do.
So why wouldn't I identify much more with a Palestinian person than I would, a dude who makes pizzas in Tel Aviv. Why wouldn't I?
Right, right. So.
And I'm not. And I'm not being argumentative. I hope you understand that.
No, I.
You are such a good and progressive and optimistic spirit that I feel that just feel icky if I feel like I'm being mean about something in one of our conversations.
No, but real quickly, Noam Chomsky was a Zionist in a sense when he went to Israel with his wife and lived on a kibbutz for a while and was thinking about living there permanently, but came back to the U.S. and did his thing here. And, you know, what it meant to him was something very different. And, in fact, the beginning of the Zionist movement was not about nationalism and land grabbing at all. So it's a more complex term. And
well, it is. And by the same token, I think a lot of us, when we use that term, we think about, you know, Alan Dershowitz. Anybody who's ever served Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is as bad as a death camp guard. You know, that's, you know, Norman Podoritz responds the same way.
Yeah, and I think people like Michael Lerner of Tikkun magazine, boy, what a wonderful progressive
Jewish
journal. I guess Tikkun means healing in Hebrew. And, boy, they're doing fantastic work. And again, it's like it's too bad they don't get the publicity of like AIPAC does. You know, people see AIPAC, it's this menacing thing and all this militarism and hyper-nationalism. But there's Tikkun, and they're doing the exact opposite and very much following, you know, that, I think it's the Torah, you know, justice, justice, you shall pursue. And doing it in a fun way, creative way for sure.
Well, I really appreciate I appreciate this dialogue, Preston. I sincerely do, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too, Bob.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Bye. Let's see who's where. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Okie no. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. How about you?
Good. Wish you and your family a good weekend, and yourself a productive trip, and I have two things for you.
Okay.
Number one, you know, ideological schools of thought are like matter. They cannot be displaced. Whenever you have one, you're going to impede upon the other, and there's going to be friction.
True.
There's not going to be any type of resolution, basically, in this day and age. They're going to fight you to the death.
I fear you're correct.
I know.
I mean, I certainly think the right wing in this country views it as a fight to death. I don't know about our side. There's a whole bunch of us, I don't include myself, who think that the proper response to an existential threat is to have a committee meeting to determine whether we ought to form a second committee who would then be tasked with scheduling the meeting of the first committee to discuss whether or not to respond to the existential threat and how many tambourines and how many choruses of Kumbaya to sing in order to do so.
Well, unfortunately, that's just a very, very not productive way of doing anything.
But I'll tell you this, it is that I'm not offering that as pure sarcasm, Jim. I'm offering that as something I have seen in action.
Well, that may be true. But I wonder about it. And I would like to ask a second question.
Sure.
What would have happened in the year 2000 had Ralph Nader not run and deflected so many votes from Al Gore? That man did his...
That is a very, very serious question, and it is one that deserves...
It's harm to any type of solution to the problems we're having today.
But by the same token, how many octogenarian Jewish voters in Florida do you really think voted for Pat Buchanan?
Well, I have no means to see into that. But
I mean, that election was, and I guess this is my point, Nader or no Nader, Florida was set up to be stolen. And Florida was stolen.
I mean, I can remember listening to the election returns when Florida came in for Gore, and then all of a sudden it went back for Bush. But still.
Oh, and I remember the live video shot of the Bush family sitting in Texas and Jeb just looking at his brother going, nah, it's okay. It's okay.
I mean, even at this state back in 2000.
Well, and that was my next question. There's a certain element of that because we're West Virginians, Jim, thinking about the year 2000, it's hard not to remember that had West Virginia simply gone Democratic like it had for every other presidential election going back to God knows who, John F. Kennedy, then Florida would not have mattered.
No, it wouldn't.
Because the five West Virginia Electoral College votes would have been enough to elect Al Gore.
Exactly.
But they sent that dried-up, sorry old husk of a pathetic imitation of a member of the human race, Charlton Heston, to the Beckley-Raleigh County Civic Center, and I know you remember it as well as I do, and he held his rifle up in the air and said, Al Gore's going to get your guns and your Bible, and you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers.
But the thing about it is, and I'll close quickly on this, when you're fighting the way they fought, what you're going to do is to deflect any support from your opponent in any way possible that you possibly can, whether it's putting in a third-party candidate or sending in somebody like Charlton Heston. And it was a watershed date in the history of this country.
It absolutely was.
And that's just looking at it very cold-heartedly and very realistically. And unfortunately, third-party candidates and people who are... I mean, this country is a two-party system, and it's not going to change for any length of time.
I don't see it changing in the foreseeable future, no.
I don't either. And basically, you have to take one or the other. And I know that people have their own agendas and their own... beliefs in which they input their votes, but you've got to be practical. This is the world of realpolitik, not of...
I want a pony.
Not of amateurs.
No, this is a contact sport. Hey, Jim, I got to roll, but thank you very much, and you have a good weekend, too.
Likewise, sir.
Bye now. Well-made points on Jim's behalf. One last call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's your buddy Mark. I'll make it quick.
I got like 20 seconds.
I'm sorry I cried because...
Don't apologize.
Well, what you and your listeners, Jim and Sandra and Preston and all of us represent to each other is so much humanity. It overwhelms me. I'm older in age than yourself, but I'm less developed politically sometimes. But I thank you for the service you conduct, and I'll continue to support you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly, and I wish you a very good weekend.
All right, Bob. Hang in there.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, we had great conversation, even though I started us out on a down note. You guys have that impact on me, and I appreciate it. You can always make things better. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you for your kind contributions that keep this going. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.